Session number 10420, rule 20.
Colonel W.I. Watson, reel 20. I was asking you about the problem of leisure on such a crowded ship, Colonel.
Well, there was very little one could do in the way of leisure. The illegal game of bingo, illegal in civilian life, but it was legal in army life, that was played in the evening. But whist and cards were played by the other ranks, which all concerned played it. They just relaxed and talked. After we'd passed Durban, when there were foreign troops came aboard, then there was a tremendous rush by the foreigners, the Rajputana Rifles, I think they were, and the Greeks, all to learn English. A lot of that went on between Durban and Suez. You've got to remember, every night the officers all changed into khaki drill for dinner, and the officers too played chess or talked. When it became so hot, you just relaxed on the deck in the dark. Of course, you've got to remember the ship was completely blacked out. All the portholes were closed, and down below it was quite inferno. You made post haste from the dining saloon to get up onto the cool of the deck. There was certainly a chess competition, and there was certainly bingo. One just talked.
Was there any sport for the men?
There was. There were, yes, indeed. There were sports between leaving Gorok and arriving at Durban, and there were sports again after Durban to Suez, because the units changed, so foreign units came aboard, so we could have sports again. Yes, there were sports, tug of war, and all the rest of it, and there were the usual deck games. But at night, the chaps all took it in turns to sleep out on the deck in the hot weather, the officers or field officers had their own particular deck that they could sleep out on at night. Because it was incredibly hot down below when the ship was all in darkness. Well, by the 1st of June, we left in May, by the 1st of June, we wore khaki drill for the first time. And we were getting towards Cape Verde. I think we did see a distant view of Cape Verde, I can't remember, but we wore khaki drill for the first time then on the 1st of June. And it's the same day that I had to sit as president of the court martial for those two deserters and private, whatever his name was, who shot himself through the foot, and I had to sit there as the court martial. I can't remember now what the outcome was. Only all the papers for those three court-martials and for one aboard, I think a chap in the Royal Air Force who'd done some a little bit of theft or something, some minor theft. I know all the papers were sent to me very surprisingly by old tatters, and the brigadier wanted five officers to come and listen in, and tatters said no, they don't, they go and do their training. It was the sort of friction that between Tatters and the Brigadier the whole time throughout the journey. But as I say, Brigadier Redden didn't really worry him in the very least. Well, then, by the 3rd of June, after we passed Cape Verde, we are awaiting entry to Freetown. Now, this was a very tricky area so far as the enemy were concerned. Of course, you had Dakar, the Vichy French were there, and the Germans were there watching and trying to be a nuisance to everybody, who any convoy that came in to Freetown. We had an escort then that came out from Freetown with 3 destroyers and a couple of Sunderland flying boats as eyes to see if there were any enemy submarines. But now, about this time, we started a thing called On Board Tonight. And in the evening, we used to have, just like they have over the radio, we had On Board Tonight. And there was a surprising amount of material that could be produced out of everybody, out of the 3,000 that was there. And it all started, I'd heard it done, no, I'd been told about it by a friend of mine who was a captain in the Royal Navy. He said, you'll be surprised what you can do. And I passed this on to the padre, and he organized it On Board Tonight. I can't remember now, but somebody would talk, or there'd be give a humorous, some humorous anecdotes or something like that.
A variety
show, yes. Well, I can give you an example of that much later, when I was in Palestine. I was attached to, I was with some unit, I can't remember it, what it was, and that sort of thing was done in this particular unit, and I gave a lecture, being very enthusiastic ornithology, on birds' feet, and I drew them on the blackboard of all the different kinds of feet that various birds had. And that was the sort of thing we could produce on Board Tonight. And we started that just about the time we entered Freetown, and which we did, I think, about the 4th of June. Now, we thought, we weren't allowed ashore. We thought it looked so lovely, Freetown, the greenery and the mangrove swamps and the hill with all the trees on it, that it was in fact an appalling place for malaria, and it was a very good thing that we weren't allowed ashore. It poured with rain, veritable monsoon rain, and it was frightfully hot at first, but it cooled down a bit after the rain. I remember going on deck and having a bath in the rain, with nice fresh rainwater, which we'd hardly known on the whole of the journey, because we had to bathe in salt water. We went into the anchorage, at about 7:45 a.m. in the a.m. and as I say, I must confess, after 10 days at sea, it looked pretty beautiful. Now,
did you have any population coming out to your boat?
Yes, bumboats coming out. Yes, in scores. They would take any bit of uniform or old clothes, but they wouldn't take socks with holes in. No, that wouldn't do. Socks were no good. I think a pair of RAF trousers with a hole in the seat, I think you would get 5 bananas for it. They were extraordinary. You threw them at the coin, and they'd bless you up to the skies and hope that the Almighty would bless you. But if you didn't, they'd use the most appalling language at you, these chaps in the bumboat. But they could get a coin before it got to the bottom of the sea, I remember. We just didn't relax the whole time. We just kept watching everything going, all the various ships moving in and out of the harbour. I remember going on deck without my topi on, because it was dull, the sun wasn't shining. The brigadier got very cross to me and said, "You know you ought to be wearing a topi, go down and put it on." Well, it seemed quite extraordinary that you had to wear a topi in such dull, wet weather. However, that was the rule and the old regulation, so we all did, except, of course, when you were having a bath, which I and many, many others did in this monsoon rain. And very lovely it was. Now, I think I mentioned the Vichy French were very close at hand, and they used to send an aeroplane over to see what was there, and it took everybody by surprise. And the next time it came over, the next morning, they did open fire at it. It came swooping down very low over the convoy. And of course, nobody could hit it fairly. And there we stayed, I think, for about 3 days. We then left on about the 6th of June at about 12:55, and it was calm and very warm, and it was a very dangerous area. We zigzagged about, the Sunderlands escorted us, Sunderland flying planes, seaplanes escorted us so far. Incidentally, the pilots of those took a whole lot of our letters back home, and they all went back within 4 days. They offered to take our letters back, and they really did, and I know they all arrived. Mine arrived with my own mother here. On the 7th of June, we crossed the equator, and we crossed the line, and we had all the usual goings on, King Neptune, and I was lathered and shaved with some awful concoction by the barbers, and while King Neptune was watching, and it was surprising how few had crossed the line at all. I don't think the crew had crossed the line, because you see they'd all been used to the North Atlantic. It's surprising how many had never crossed the line before. We were in the doldrums. It was dead calm, and we were zigzagging about the whole time. We were zigzagging about, although when we got further south, it wasn't so necessary. We were getting round by the Cape. It was then that it was getting so hot that the men took it in turn to sleep on the deck. They couldn't all sleep there, but they took it in turn to sleep on the deck. And on Sundays, we used to have the church service. We always had Royal Naval prayers, and we always sang Eternal Father, Strong to Save. And as I say, we crossed the line, and we had the crossing of the line ceremony. Oil and whitewash was what it was. I think I was lathered with it as well. Then I was shaved and hosed. The captain was the chief officer, Soame. King Neptune was group captain, Rice, in the Royal Air Force. And that was the sort of the ceremony. And then, of course, as June passed, the weather began to get cooler. And in fact, fresh water, which we'd taken aboard on Freetown, was turned on all day. And there was a tremendous day on one occasion when we had washing. Every man washed all his clothes or whatever he could wash, but none of them were allowed to be hung out on the rails or the rigging. And so they were just dried as best they could. I suppose they were put out on deck somewhere, but they weren't allowed on the rails nor on the ship's rigging. But it began to get cooler. I know that I had an iron in our cabin, Tammy and I, and my good batsman ironed a vest of mine on the cabin floor, and I don't think he'd used an iron before, because instead of it being a nice white vest, it was a sort of russet brown after he'd finished ironing. And so too Sammy's Battiscombe's pajamas, they too had nasty brown burn stains on them after his batman had ironed them on the cabin floor. I think I mentioned that we had discussions. We had booklets on the army, German army, where you could discuss the composition of the German army or parts of it. And as I think I mentioned, Sammy Bastison gave a very good lecture on mountain warfare, and then somebody would give us a lecture on, well, we'd study the Western Desert. And there was a chap in the Royal Air Force gave a very good discussion on paratroops and gliders. He'd been in one of these operations on the Hague and Rotterdam. And so you couldn't give them to everybody on board at the same time, so you did it in relay. They had to give it in relays. But now, I tell you another thing too, which we did. We studied the stars, because when you went into the Western Desert, you at first you had to find your way about at night by the stars. Well, we were now, after having passed crossed the line, we were in the country of the Southern Cross, and so people studied the Southern Cross. But then, and you suddenly watched at night, you could see the plough, the North Star, getting lower and lower and lower on the horizon, and then the Southern Cross coming up. And of course, when we'd gone round the Cape and past Durban, we got it in reverse again. Now we studied the stars, and of course, every morning we had this ship's muster at 10 a.m. daily, so that took up some time, and everybody had to be on parade for that ship's muster. And it was a very good time for inspections. And then we practiced boat drill, action stations once a week. And we took the boat to the National Station. It was about tea time in the afternoon, and we practiced signals. In fact, I believe we practiced signaling from one ship to another with the helio, and the food, as I said, I think was very good. You asked that always. Very fair, and perhaps it was a sameness rather, that's to be expected. And of course, the strawberry ices were absolutely delicious. And then, halfway through June, it began to get cooler, and I went back to sleep in my cabin. And we still continued our discussions, and we started boxing. And training again from boat to boat by lamp and helio, especially to the Georgic, I think we did it. And by the middle of June, there was a nasty swell appearing, suddenly appeared. The doldrums had gone, and there was a nasty swell. And we were heading for the Cape. Every man had been warned, incidentally, to try and humour the Royal Air Force, as they were had a chip on their shoulders, so badly indeed. And so every man was told to be kind to the chaps in the Royal Air Force. Well, on the 15th of June, we went back into service dress. There really was a nasty spell when we had the ship's muster. The old boat was beginning to roll about, but now we were 100 miles south of Cape Horn. Not Cape Horn, Cape Good Hope. We were really well south of, I think we were 100 or more miles south of the Cape of Good Hope. And it was here we saw all the wonderful Southern Pacific seabirds. I think I mentioned the great wandering albatross, the sooty albatross, used to follow the boat, never flick their wings. They just used to glide, following the boat to see what rubbish was emptied out so that they could have a meal. And there was the various petrels, and we were travelling at about 17 knots. That's about what we were doing. We had to go as slowest boat could go. It was very, as I say, very unpleasant going round the Cape, 100 miles out from the Cape, and the days were very short then, because we were in winter. Then on the 19th of June, we'd gone round the Cape, and we entered Durban in state. We were led by HMS Exeter. All our crew members had clean uniform on, and we were told to be extremely small. All the chaps were supposed to smarten themselves up. And there were two brand new red ensigns flying from the boat, and by 9 o'clock in the morning, we were entering the harbour at 10 knots. The South African gunners, there were some gunners at the harbour mouth, you might say, and they cheered us and saluted us as we entered the harbour. And every man had been told that he had really had to be on his best behavior when he went ashore. And as a result, the people were truly wonderful. I think probably every man, the whole 3,000 aboard, were given hospitality of some sort. And by 1 o'clock, I think, after we'd had a meal, leave had started and the chaps were going ashore. There was in the harbour HMS Barham, which had been involved in Cape Matapan, and they gave us a chair as we entered. And it really was rather a majestic sight, this very fine convoy headed by the Exeter steaming into Durban Harbour, where we had 3 days shore leave. We came back at night, and afterwards, I can mention, the people of Durban thought the behaviour was extremely good, except for one or two incidences, which were sailors, I regret to say. The behaviour of the troops was extremely good. Well, then, I went ashore with first with the brigade major, Beryl Innes, of course, who was in his Seaforth kilt, and Sammy Battiscombe and myself in our best khaki drill. I think we were in khaki drill now. I'm not sure about it. And each morning we would hold a route march, but I went ashore in the afternoon of our day after our arrival, and we'd hardly put a foot on shore when a South African came and took us off for a tea somewhere and wanted to know, talk to us about where we'd come from, wanted to know all about it. And there we went and had drinks and at the Cumberland Hotel, and then we went to the Marine Hotel for dinner. And I was told by a sergeant in the 9th DLI that my sister was here. I said, it's quite nonsense. I'm sure she's not. She's either in Cairo or home in England. Well, he said, sir, go and see Major Robinson. He'll tell you that your sister is here. And sure enough, my sister was there, staying with a Lady Hall, the wife of Sir Hawthorne Hall, who was the governor of Aden, and she was on her way back to England, and so was my sister, and so was my sister had a friend with her, a girlfriend with her, and thereafter we spent in the afternoons two or three very happy afternoons. In the mornings we always had route marches along the promenade and back along the low front by the sea, and of course all scores of people, inhabitants of Durban, used to come and watch us. And my company and I were marching along the front one day with the buglers, and the buglers' lips, of course, were extremely sore because of the salt water, the salt air at sea. And there was one dear old woman walking alongside as fast as she could. When they stopped, she said, give us another blow. She loved them so. And there were crowds of people there, and innumerable Union Jacks being waved all over, and photographs taken, and people wishing us good luck. And we would have a stop at the far end of the promenade, and we'd be laden with oranges, and we'd have eat the oranges for 10 minutes and then do the return journey. And we had a church parade there, which was incredibly smart. And there was a band there of, I suppose, some, I think the 9th Battalion had a small band. And I suppose it would be the first time the regimental march had ever been played in Durban as we marched back. And the Lord Mayor took the salute, and an extremely good sermon was there. It was preached by a South African, by the padre in Durban, the parish priest.